con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Hello and welcome once again. I'm Hugo Monier. It's been another mad week for us all, with Eddie Jones consigned to England history. And in the Premiership, the underdogs are starting to come back good. So sit back and enjoy, because the rugby's on. Yes, what a few days we've had. England fans up and down the land are no doubt celebrating the news that regime change is on its way. And with that, goodbye and thank you, Eddie Jones. Meanwhile, here in the Gallagher Premiership at home, London Irish have broken their losing spell, whilst fellow strugglers Bristol held the champions Leicester Tigers to a thrilling draw at Ashton Gate. And as usual, Hal Crittenden's with us for the next hour. And just for him, we've invited, and I've also brought, a bit of backup today, because we have a Quins fan on the show. So step forward, Tom Deacon. Hallelujah. Gentlemen, how are you both? How's your weekend been?
Mine's been very good. I have watched a lot of rugby. I don't want to start by, you know, obviously you're both Quins fan and picking on a Quins player, but why is a prop, Joe Marler, wearing leggings on a normal rugby pitch? I want him out the game. I mean, we talk about Eddie Jones, we talk about Razzie Erasmus, we talk about Wayne Pivac. I think Joe Marler is a disgrace for what he did at the weekend, and I can't forgive it. It's so, a prop wearing leggings anyway is mad, but you do that on an artificial pitch, you don't do it on a normal pitch. Is that not outrageous?
It was cold.
So it's attention seeking. He just wants us to talk about him, and it's worked. It's driving me mad.
Tom, do you have a view on leggings, tights, whatever you want to call them?
Listen, Joe Marler is an absolute legend. He can wear what he wants. He can do an interview however he wants to do an interview. That was my highlight of the weekend, watching that back on repeat. I mean, if he wants to wear leggings, he can do that. I've been known to wear leggings. Hal's definitely worn some sort of thermal leggings
I've got
at some
leggings
point
on
in his
now.
Life.
Yeah.
So there's only one place to start, and that's at HQ, Twickenham, where the higher-ups have decided that they finally had enough of the Eddie Jones experiment. Yep, a dismal autumn internationals campaign, a pretty much universal backlash from disgruntled England fans, mean that Steve Borthwick, alongside a number of other candidates, are now potentially going to be in charge of our England rugby team ahead of the Six Nations and into next year's World Cup. Hal, we'll start with you. Your reflections on Eddie Jones in the last 7 years he's been in charge.
The thing is, I'm feeling very guilty about the Eddie Jones situation because I just, you know, I'm just having fun. I'm a bit of a pundit. I didn't realise the power that I've got. I do think the RFU have, I think it was what I've said has maybe tipped them into the decision. So I feel like I'm the one that's kind of been the final nail in the coffin, Eddie Jones. And I really didn't mean to. I was just having fun. I was saying some fun stuff. The truth is, I've never liked him, and I'm delighted that he's gone. So he was. You know, I didn't like him in 2015. I don't like him now. Do you know what? I think it's been the nasty atmosphere. As I said last week, I think it's been the fact that he does wind people up, and I think he could make a move into politics. If he likes being disliked, please go into politics, Eddie. Make him the new Chancellor, because he loves it. He loves taking that sort of abuse. I think that's the perfect job for him. So for me, it's been 7 years of what I thought it was going to be. Basically, a very, very unpopular England team. A lovely start as well. You know, 2016 was great, but it has been too many ups and downs. And we want just wanted solid England identity. That's what we wanted from Eddie Jones. We didn't get it.
Tom, solid England identity is Hal's take on it. How about yours?
Well, that's the problem. I don't think there was much of an identity, definitely in this autumn festival. By the way, Christmas jumper. So if you don't mind, the lights have gone out for Eddie, so that's why I've done that. He's not for everyone, is he? He's not for everyone. At the same time, he's one of the best. 81 tests, I think 59 victories. You didn't have to like the way Eddie always set up that England team, but at the same time we were building to the World Cup. But you've got to respect the the bravery of the panel and the review to decide, look, it's time for Eddie to go, let's twist, World Cup's coming up, let's have a bit of a friendly atmosphere in the camp. And I think it, you have to just get behind it now. If they would have stuck with Eddie, I'd have been the antithesis to Hal, and I would have got right behind Eddie.
Fair play. I mean, Tom's made some really good points there. You know, when you look at the actual results, yes, we can debate the process and perhaps some of his coaching theories and philosophies, but he's been pretty successful the last 7 years. Should that be overlooked, Hal?
I just don't think the win rate has been that spectacular. I think it was amazing for that first year when we sort of went unbeaten, 2016. But it's the Jose Mourinho thing, isn't it? Where you start off really, really well, and then it just gradually sort of falls apart. It's like me in relationships. It's like the first year is great and then it just goes downhill. I don't know if everybody else has that experience as well.
yeah, well, thank you for sharing for us. This has turned into...
I've overshared again, haven't I? I've overshared.
No, I like it. Sharing is an absolutely fantastic quality. Tom, if you were to be England coach, what changes would you make?
Bants. That's B-A-N-T-S is the number one. That's the motto, Bants. Bants. It's the only rules. It's Bants. Because I feel like England just haven't played with that guile, that expression. Some of the players have already said that didn't get selected by Eddie, you know, it's not fun. They're playing with no confidence. My first meeting, I'm calling it a meeting. I probably wear the Christmas jumper with the lights on. And I'd do a reverse joke. I'd say something like, oh, gentlemen, I'm back. I'm here. Let's turn the lights on. Full Bants. That's probably my team speech. I'd have some other people with me. Definitely wouldn't pick Hal. But Hugo, if you're free, come along because of your experience. And I'd just say to the lads, look, this was a Jose Mourinho mind game from Eddie. He's got us playing so badly that everyone underestimates us. So let's go out to the World Cup in France 2023 and they won't be expecting how good we are with full capital B Bants.
Oh, I'm inspired. I'm actually inspired and thinking about coming out of retirement. Tom, that's...
Isn't that a wonder... What Tom said there is such a wonderful way from diverting away from any actual real rugby knowledge or ability on his part.
It's wait
pure
a minute.
Performance. Pure.
Oh, right. Okay. Hal. All right, Hal. Okay, Hal, I'll answer that. Sorry, Hugo, not taking over this show. But I'm not having that. That's classic politician. If it wasn't been left in such a mess from the previous government, i.e. Eddie Jones, I would have had an easier job. But it's going to be a rebuild from now on. Let's ignore 2023. It's all about 2027. And at least we're not as bad as Wales, so it's fine.
Yes. Let's just constantly be looking forward to the next World Cup but one. We'll go, yes, we will go out early in 2023, but 2027 is what we're aiming for. Yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely. Hal, what would you do if you was England coach?
I would, of course, I'd get rid of a lot of Quinn's players, and I know that would break your heart, but Marcus Smith is Danny Cipriani, I fear. I love him, he's a really nice guy, but I fear he's like a really good club player, and he doesn't really do it on the international stage. Now, that's just completely my opinion, and the fact he's playing at Quinn. I mean, he's with the wrong team at Quinn's to make him into that great international player. He knows where he needs to go. I don't want to get rid of every... I mean, well, I do. Don Brandt, yeah, also, I'm not excited by. But I think you've got to bring player... I mean, Rapava Ruskin at Gloucester... maybe I'm just, you know, again, sold on his form at the moment, but I think we need to toughen up the front row, bring him in, really develop him as a player. Having said that, he's 30, so I don't know how much more development you can do. But my biggest point would be we lack strength in the second row. Mario Itoje needs a stronger partner. You've got to get George Cruz out of retirement. It should be like, you know, like Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger films where they go and see him in his mountain lodge and, you know, say, we need you. We need to get you back into the army or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's that feeling with George Cruz. Somebody needs to go and sit down with him, offer him £1 million a game. We're the richest, you know, the RFU is the richest organisation in rugby. Just pay him whatever he wants. Don't tell anyone. Get George Cruz back and Mario Itoje in the second row because we need to. It's our front five, I think, is my completely ill-considered opinion.
This is classic you, Hal, revealing your true colours, I've got to say. So... your first thing of doing of becoming England coach is to get someone out of retirement, paying them way over the odds and not telling anyone. This sounds familiar, this story.
It's not.
I wonder where you got that inspiration.
Look, it's not actually breaking any rules, is it, to quietly pay one pair more? It's to try and keep the dressing room together. Honestly, it's fine. But George Cruz back in second row, and then we're fine. We're laughing.
Well, whilst the England situation has dominated the headlines this week, it's not exactly been a bed of roses for Wales either, whether it be the round ball or the oval ball. Tom, do you think England fans have any sympathy for the Welsh in their current crisis?
Your question gave away the clue there, Hugo. There was a laugh, wasn't there? There was a little laugh when you said it. You were just like, do they have any sympathy? No, listen, sympathy is about understanding someone else and their position and being able to sort of show pity and sorrow. And yes, I think England fans understand the problems that Wales have had. We didn't lose to Georgia, which is not really a place, it's just a name that can be given to a girl. But I just feel like Wales, yes, England fans do have some sympathy towards Wales, but we like the fact that they're not doing well, then that makes our blushes look even less significant. And look, they won the Grand Slam in 2019. This is a team that are decent. So I feel like England fans' emotions towards Wales is very much just like a meh. Is that like a technical term? Just meh.
Oh,
yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, you're spot on. But how, when you look at Wayne Pivac's record, for him as Wales head coach, 34 matches, only 13 wins, 20 losses and one draw. That's not good enough for a nation where their national sport is rugby, is it, Hal?
I think it's probably time for Wales to change what their national sport is. That's the way I could... That's the way to avoid that humiliation. But I don't blame Wayne Pivac. I think it is a really difficult situation in Wales. His win record isn't good. But I've got a really silly idea which no one's going to agree with. I remembered 40 years ago, there was the anniversary of the RFU being formed. I think it was 1981. There was an England-Wales-Scotland-Ireland game where they amalgamated the teams. I think maybe, there's going to be a lot of mad reaction to this. What about an England-Wales, a merger? Two failing companies come together to succeed. We play as one nation. Wouldn't that be fun, though? I'd love to have Rhys Zammit playing in an England-Wales combined team. A little bit of Alan Wynne-Jones to come on and just bring a bit of grizzled, you know, knowledge to the team. Justin Tipperick, cheeky tripping in midfield. I just find there's a lot of fascinating talent in the Welsh side that I think England and Wales could work together and really, you know, surprise the world. I just think it'd be great to see just the idea of Welsh standing beside Welsh fans supporting the teams together. It's a fantasy, of course. They would hate it. But what about?
Yeah, I get it, Hal. There's a couple of things. Number one, you're trying to get Tom and I to reflect on an event that happened before we were born. That's the first one. That's it. That you go in the bin for that. The second one, I have an even better idea. What about creating a team of England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, and we tour against Southern Hemisphere teams every 4 years.
Wouldn't that be amazing? That sounds like a really magical dream, but it'll never happen. Never happen.
Yeah. We're going to call it the British and Irish Lions, and I reckon we go with that one. What do you reckon, Tom?
I think Hal's onto something in the fact that saying that I was being very... I don't know, condescending in some way towards Wales. I think England are better when Wales are strong. And I don't mean they're stronger than England, but I feel like you need our sort of Northern Hemisphere teams to be as strong as they possibly can be. And that if Wales are poor, England look poor, because that's just the way it goes in the Six Nations. And obviously, as I just mentioned before, Wales winning the Grand Slam in 2019. We need England to be firing on all cylinders. We need a strong Welsh team. That's how I see it. But no, definitely no combination of, what was it, businesses coming together? Hal's lost it. He's lost the plot.
Lost the plot, and so did Dai Young to a certain extent, or that's been the reaction from Dai Young's comments. Dai Young said that he doesn't believe the next coach of Wales should be Welsh. I think to give it context, he said that none of the Welsh coaches who are currently plying their trades across the four regions are up there winning the Heineken Champions Cup or competing in the URC for honours, getting to semi-finals and finals. How do you think that's a fair comment?
Yeah, it's not shocking to say Welsh, there isn't, you know, there are, they shouldn't be, the next coach shouldn't be Welsh. I mean, when was the coach last Welsh? There was, Rob Howley stood in for a bit, didn't he, when Warren Gatland was out, didn't he? Yeah, and then there was, and that was pretty terrible. I'm not saying Welsh coaches are terrible, but there certainly isn't a good crop. I don't know. I mean, how much would they want a Welsh coach? What about if they chose an English coach? Was Steve Borthwick took over as Wales coach? So I don't know why I'm bringing a lot of England-Wales things. It's just the idea of Steve Borthwick doing a sort of standing there pretending to know the national anthem. Oh, it'd be brilliant. John Redwood at that Welsh party conference years ago. Anyway, so yeah, then they'd want a Welsh coach if it was an Englishman. But I think, yeah, they're not going to go for a Welsh coach, aren't they? Are they? I mean, it's going to be another Southern Hemisphere coach, I think, for Wales. And that's, you know, we're getting used to that. I mean, maybe, I don't know, because maybe they are missing that element of the Welsh coach that really could fire them before a game, really could be, you know, really impassioned, really go for it, boys. But I don't know. It hasn't seemed to work in the past. I don't think it'll work. I don't think it'll work in the future. I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah, well, watch the space on that. And on the question of national allegiances, there was news this week that Ireland scrum half John Cooney is considering a switch to Scotland under World Rugby's new eligibility laws. Hal, what are your thoughts on that? Do you just think that John Cooney actually prefers the Scottish national anthem, the Flower of Scotland?
I do think Flower of Scotland is a better national anthem. I think anyone who wants to play sport for Scotland, I think, you know, mainly football or rugby, should be allowed to. The very fact you want to play in such an annoyingly inconsistent nation when it comes to sport. I mean, Scots would agree with you. You know, in rugby, they'll beat England, lose to Wales. Do you know what I mean? They'll have a great... It's in football, a history of getting one good result and then getting three terrible results. Scotland are infuriatingly inconsistent when it comes to a national sport. So I say, of course, let him do it. If you want to play for Scotland, good on you. Go ahead. What annoys me is that fans are never allowed to change their national allegiance, because I really want to support France at next year's World Cup. So I think that should be easy. It shouldn't be a problem that I should be there with a French top, you know, singing the Marseillaise. I just think we're fine with players doing it. Why not let fans do it?
Yeah, that's a fair point. In fairness, John Cooney, he said that his dad would be really happy for him to be playing for Scotland. Tom, if you could select just one player from one of the other home nations to play for England, who would that person be?
Well, I'm really glad you've asked me this, Hugo. I just wanted to add to that. I would love to see Hal in a French top. I really would. I think he's got the eyes for it, that blue.
I am quite French, aren't I? Do you think? Sexiness, je ne sais quoi.
Oh no, I didn't say that. I just said there is a Frenchness to you, and someone who takes mealtime very seriously. That sounded harsh. I didn't mean it like that. I meant, you know, the French love the gustation, you know, like eat it. Anyway, the point I was going to make, you go ask me a question, Hal, don't interrupt. I feel like with this, I would get John Cooney into the England team, just so he can't sign for Scotland. That would be the one player that I would sign up. And I actually think with John, he's obviously forgotten his dad's Christmas present this year and has decided this is exactly what he wants for his dad to see him play for Scotland.
That is a great shout. A bit of panic buying, just changing your allegiance. Gentlemen, okay, that's it for the international stuff. When we come back, we'll be looking at a surprising weekend in the Premiership. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Join Ellis James and pals down the clubhouse for a light-hearted and entertaining journey through the history of sport's forgotten, rarely seen, iconic and hotly debated moments. All episodes available now on the BT Sport app.
Welcome back to the Rugby's On with me, Hugo Moni, my guest Tom Deacon and Hal Cruttendon. So it was a fascinating weekend in the Premiership. London Irish finally clawed their way off the bottom of the table with a pulsating victory against Newcastle. And Bristol completed a fantastic comeback against Leicester Tigers to earn a draw and end a run of six consecutive defeats. Hal, Bears are bottom of the table after the weekend's result. Are they too good to finish last when you consider the plethora of players that they possess?
Well, everybody's too good to finish last in the Premiership now. There doesn't seem to be that team that you just look at and go, oh, this is an easy game this week. Bristol haven't recaptured how brilliant they were two seasons ago. And I loved them two seasons ago. It was such a shame. You know, I think Quinn's fluked it, didn't it, in the semi and put them out. But they've never quite refound that form. They're making. T- they, they they see, you see flashes of it, and then they seem to make terrible mistakes again or whatever. I think this is a turning point for them, though. I think coming back to get the draw against Leicester shows that they've got real spirit back, and they should have won it. You know, they should have won it. And AJ McGinty messed his kick up. He's a great player, but I just think it could be. I think no team deserves to finish bottom of this Premiership because every team is dangerous on their day. So I think this, hopefully it's Bristol's turning point. I'm very fond of them.
Yeah, fingers crossed for them. And you can tell the competitive nature of it because you've got Leicester Tigers, who are the reigning champions. They're fifth in the table. Tom, what do you think the difference is for them this year?
I just feel like they've just the inconsistency. That's what everyone in this division, I mean, Hal's talking about the Bristol Bears. I think they're a fantastic team. I don't think they should be on the bottom. And as he says, quite rightly, every team can beat any other team. So it's just finding that consistency and that form. I think they're just struggling because they're just finding out who they are as a team to go forward. But I reckon they're going to excel from that fifth place.
It's that thing of being champions. They've got that target on their back, haven't they? Everybody now go, oh, they loved it last season. They were sort of coming from nowhere. And maybe Leicester, there's a little bit of residual guilt that they won the Premiership last year but weren't necessarily the best team in the Premiership last year. I just think there was a feeling. I think they got it together on one day at Twickenham and won that final. But we know who the real winners were last season. And I think that's in their mind as well.
Hal, you're a disgrace. You're an absolute disgrace, but I love you for it. Gentlemen, it all came good for the team that Bristol have replaced at the bottom of the table. London Irish, they beat Newcastle 39 points to 17, and that ended a sequence of five straight defeats for Irish. Hal, they were playing at home for the first time in 43 days. It's a strange league this year, isn't it, to try and get that continuity and develop momentum?
Oh, totally. I mean, Sarries have to play in Europe next week and they've had 3 weeks without a competitive game. So it does, it throws, you know, it's throwing everybody all over the place. I mean, I don't, honestly, I'm rubbish at the finance of the game and what happened, but it is a disaster that we lost two teams during the season. Is there not some way that before the season starts, we can sort of check the financial credibility of each club to make it through the season so that people only really go bust in when the season's not on, because it's just it's ruined, you know, it's ruined the Premiership. The players are all over the place, not knowing when they're playing next because of they've always got the weekend off. They know they're always going to have that weekend off because of there being an odd number of teams. But the fact we've lost Wasps and Worcester has meant that teams are just not playing or not playing regularly. But London Irish, I dread that game December 23rd. Sarries are away at London Irish that I'm going to see. And, you know, this is the second bottom team in the Premiership. And I really think that'll be a 50-50 game where the Sarries can win there. That's how competitive the league is. But, yeah, the ups and downs of not playing for a while, not playing for ages, then coming back, I think it's a nightmare for the players, isn't it? I mean, would you have found it tough?
I'd have hated it. Yeah. I would have hated it. Do you know what? It's that kind of balance because the players now have more weekends off within a season, which is great for player welfare and being able to rest and recuperate. But I think especially a team like Saracens, when you're flying, you want to keep playing every single week. And as you rightly pointed out, we switch gear, we're into Europe this week, and Saracens, well, they played against an Israeli club last week. They did lose that, so they've obviously lost a little bit of their focus. But then for some of the internationals that have been away for a month, brilliant to have a week off, and I don't think you'll actually take it away from them. But every team are going to struggle to a different extent, that's for sure. But gentlemen, the weekend started at the Rec, and it was a brilliant Friday night game, which saw Harlequins make it four wins on the bounce, and head coach Tabo Mattsson, he called it a gritty win. So not very Harlequins at all. Tom, Marcus Smith, he wasn't playing at the weekend. Unfortunately, he's going to be out till next year. But they seem to be dealing without some of their star players and the fact that they weren't able to be their fluent Harlequins best but find a way to win. That must be really, really pleasing as a Harlequins fan.
Very pleasing. I feel like the first 40 was fantastic against Bath. We just looked fast. It was fast play. Joe Marler in his leggings was just incredible, the amount of carries he had. And I think those leggings really helped him through, whatever how Cruttendon says. But yeah, without Marcus Smith, it can be difficult. But then there's been lots of times when he's been away, international duty, wasn't allowed back to Quinn's. So I feel like they've had to adapt. And Tommaso, aka Tommy Allen, has had to pick up the pieces for them. And it looked good. However, that second 40 was just poor. Really let Bath back into the game. And the fact that they dug the heels in to get the win is going to be really rewarding for the team. And that will give them the confidence to go forward.
Yeah, plenty of highlights in the first half. But there was also a massive highlight at the end of the game. I'm not sure if either of you have seen the interview that player of the match Joe Marler did with Sarah Elgin. Check this out.
I feel actually a bit... This is definitely a token thing, isn't it? You lot...
Why? Because, why is it token?
Because I know the secrets.
What's the secret?
Well, because there's other players that are better tonight, and but they're not happy to talk on camera, so this is just a fraud, basically.
OK, well, I'm gonna disagree.
Why is it Sarah or not Sarah?
Because Sarah's my name.
Oh.
Yeah, funny that. Listen, can we talk about rugby, please? 14 carries, and it was a good scrum. That's why you've got Player of the Match award. Anyway, third, halfway through the season.
That's not bad. We're doing all right, but we want to kind of chase Sarries down. We quite like to aim for that top two. It's not good enough to just be top four, because we quite like a home semi. So that's like, the, you know, home semi. Like, we want that semi.
So Joe Marler chasing a home semi. Gentlemen, thoughts on that interview?
He's like a character out of Lord of the Rings, isn't he, when he's got his hood up? He does look like a... It's that enigmatic quality. You don't know what's going to come out of his mouth next. He's got a sort of danger to him. I sort of model myself on Joe Marler as well. I liked it on this show. That literally any idiocy can come out of my mouth. But he does, at this, I don't know, it's when he smiles that he's most frightening, because you just don't know where he's going to take the conversation, is he, all the time? But I think there should be extra money to anybody who has to interview him, because he's a nightmare. You can tell the stress of going, what are you saying? What are you talking about now? Why are you asking about whether it's Sarah or Sarah? What's wrong with you? You know, so huge kudos to Sarah Elgin for dealing with that. He's a nightmare. He's a nightmare, and he'll be out the game now because he's worn those tights and he's annoyed me. And when I say things, they tend to happen.
Tom, what did you make of it?
I'm the opposite to Howard. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was very entertaining. If you want a serious interview, don't chat to Joe. That's basically it. The eyes are what really got me the whole way through. Sarah, that bothered him. He wanted to discuss it. He talked about all the points he wanted to talk about, and she asked the questions that she wanted. I think it was perfect. It was a great interview. I loved him. I think it's fantastic. It gives an extra element to rugby.
Certainly does. Well, gentlemen, the remaining game this weekend saw Gloucester end their 3-match losing run to beat Northampton Saints. So that means they move above Northampton to go fourth in the table. And gents, that's it for our Premiership Roundup. But we've got a little game of Who Am I? Tom, this is your debut on the show. So just to warn you, Hal takes these things very, very seriously. It's a simple game. I'll give you three clues and you answer the simple question. So who am I? Number one. I have played rugby union for clubs in both England and Australia. Clue number two. I captained my country at youth level, but went on to get just 16 international caps. And finally, in May 2019, I was voted Player of the Year by the Rugby Players Association. Tom, have you got any ideas as to who I am?
Yeah, lots of ideas on that. Just racking my brain. Just not enough time. Because I'm being pushed. What I'm going to do, because I've seen Hal's face light up during that question, I think I'm just going to let him have this win because he's a bit down at the moment. With the dating fiasco that's going on at the moment. So I'm going to let him answer it, if that's all right, and know that I was right as well.
Yes, perfect. So Hal, tell us.
No, I suddenly went yes, and I'm sure it is this guy. It does seem... I suddenly at the moment I was going, oh, who could it be? It's Danny Cipriani.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, correct.
So that's how it does matter a lot, Tom. Sorry. It kind of makes a difference of whether I have a nice day or not, whether I win things like this. Brilliant.
No, but I mean, Tom is so selfless. He knew it was. He just wanted your day to be better. So well done you, Tom. A point each of both of you. Of course, he played for a few different clubs in England and he played for Melbourne Rebels in Australia. So there we go. Well, earlier in the show, we heard from Joe Marler, one of the very best English scrummagers of his generation. But scrums, well, they're a contentious part of the game. It can all get quite murky at times. But if you could change a law to make the scrum a bit more entertaining or speed the game up, how, what might that be?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I want to see the scrum change because I love the fact of being a fan that if you get, you know, the ref usually ends up blowing for a penalty at the end of a scrum and you just go, yes, completely agreed, he hinged and all the rest. None of us understand what's going on. So I quite like the fact that it just, you know, that it isn't clearer. I do think the constant resetting drives us mad and that in the end, after a couple of resets, the ref should just flip a coin. Just flip a coin and just, you know, decide it that way. That's the, because it is getting boring. It's fun to watch men in pain. Of course it's fun. And that's why we watch a scrum. But it goes on too long now. So just flip a coin after having to reset. Because it is getting boring. It takes up too much of the game.
It does at times, you're right. And Tom, it's a bit of a hidden world, isn't there? All sorts of things that are going on that probably shouldn't be going on. But Tom, do you love that sense of anarchy when you watch a scrum?
I quite like it. Yeah, I always think, is what angle, what degree is it going to turn? That's all my favourite one. So I'll be like, 60, 65 degrees it's going to turn. Just predict it. That's my in-match betting. I feel like a couple of rules should be changed in rugby, like water breaks, that's ridiculous. Get rid of that. Just minimise that again. And the television match official, just let them, you don't need a referee anymore. So that would speed up things, like Hal says.
So you don't need a referee, so the television match official, what, is just broadcasting from the van?
Yeah, broadcasting on one megaphone. So depending on where you're sat in the stadium, is more beneficial. Because you don't, like Hal says, you don't know what's going on most of the time. You're just waiting for it to be decided. Oh, and then the whistle goes and you're like, oh, he's pointing that way. Great, referee, it's our ball. So I feel like there needs to be some way of letting people know what's going on. And one way to do that is get rid of the ref. And just have the, you know, the
just have a massive fight. Get rid of the ref.
Yeah.
Just have one mass brawl. I'm sure World Rugby are actually tuned into this, so they will take each and every one of those suggestions very, very seriously. Right, Tom, well, you've had your quiz warm up with Who Am I? Now, it's for the main event. Call yourself a fan. And last week, Hal Cruttendon and Cueve McDonald both scored 3 points. Tom, well, I'm hoping you can put Hal in his place this week. It's Quins against Saris. Let's get it on. Tom, okay, 5 questions. It's really simple. You just give me the right answers. I'll give you the points anyway because I really want Harlequins to win. Okay, it's really, really simple. It's really simple. Question number one. Harlequins are founded in 1866. But what was their original name? Was it A, Twickenham RFC, B, Hampstead FC, or C, RFC Harlequins?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with me is multiple choice doesn't go well because now I'm debating in my head. I'll go with, what would you go with, Hugo?
I don't know, B stands out, but so do the others, so it's up to
okay. you. Okay. Do you know what? That's funny because that's what I would have gone for. I'm going to say B on this one.
That's so weird. You're absolutely spot on. Yeah, they were called Hampstead Football Rugby Club. And that was
established. I actually knew that without cheating. Sorry, carry on.
Did you?
I wasn't cheating. I'm including everybody, Hal. That's what we do. That's the new future of England rugby. Bants.
Yes, exactly. Bringing everyone into it. They changed their name to Harlequins RFC in 1870 when half of their membership left to form Wasps. There we go, a bit of a history for you as well. Question number two, who has made the most appearances for Harlequins? Is it A, Danny Kerr? Is it B, Nick Evans? Or is it C, Mike Brown? Or is it C, Mike Brown? Or is it C, Mike Brown?
God. Okay, well, here's the thing. I know Danny Kerr's obviously got the most tries, but I think it's the guy from Southampton, it's Mike Brown.
Oh,
spot on. Yeah, Mike Brown played 351 times for Harlequin, scoring 500 points. Okay, you're flying. Well done.
Thanks.
It's 2 from 2. Question number three. Which of these teams has not used the Twickenham Stoop as their home ground? Is it A, London Scottish? Is it B, London Welsh? Or C, London Irish?
I'm going to hazard a guess here that the luck of the Irish are going to go with C, London Irish haven't used it.
Sorry, I couldn't quite hear you. Did you say B, London Welsh?
Well, I said the luck of the Irish, but I know that I've been to watch them in Majeski Stadium and come on, you Irish, which you mentioned, yeah. Queeve McDonough, who used to do the announcing for that. I think it's actually B again. I'm going to stick with B on this one.
Okay, brilliant. Lovely stuff, Tom. You're flying.
Thanks, mate. This is great.
B, London Welsh. Okay, question number four. Clean sweep potentially on the cards here. How many unanswered points did Bristol score when they came back to draw with Leicester on Saturday? Was it A, 14, was it B, 17, or was it C, 21?
It was 24. It was 25 apiece. I think it was A on this one, I think, on that one.
You're flying. Yes, thanks, you're right. Mate. Bristol were 26-14 down, scoring 14 unanswered points to draw 26-26, playing the last quarter of the game with 14 men. Okay, we haven't had this season, which is just remarkable. You're 4 from 4. This is for the clean sweep.
I just can't believe it.
How is not your turn yet? Okay, just be
sorry,
patient.
Yeah.
Just be
shush, patient.
Jeez, yeah. I'm having a conversation with Tom.
Yeah, because it was that red card, wasn't it, Hugo, that really changed the game for Leicester Tigers. It really changed that game and then they were allowed to come back into it. So yeah, just pipe down, Hal. Come on, man.
In fact, Tom, I'm going to give you a bonus point for that extra bit of intel. So
yeah, thank you.
That's superb. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, final question. Which team has got the most bonus points so far this season? You mentioned luck of the Irish. Is it A, London Irish? Is it B, Newcastle? Or is it C, Bath?
I'd love to give it to those fans that were brilliant for the Newcastle Falcons. But no, it's London Irish.
5 from 5. In fact, you're 6 from 5 because of that bonus point. You're absolutely right. It's London Irish, despite being second bottom. They have the most losses this season. They're the most bonus points so far this season with 9. Tom, this is remarkable. You've scored 6 out of 5.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to thank everybody. My love of the game is enthusiasm. I love the vibe. I love the energy. And anyone who's worn this jersey is an absolute legend. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, Tom, stop it. You're a true...
Hugo, was it the 5 tries you scored against the Chiefs in that 70-5 victory? You scored 16 tries that year. Was that one of the highlights for you?
Or that was. In fact, you get another bonus point for that. That was in the championship. So at the end of that section, call yourself a fan. Tom Deacon has got 7 out of 5. Never been done before in the history of this quiz. How are you ready?
I am ready. That was so outrageous. That was worse than the coughing major, or you know, the coughing friend of the major on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It's appalling. One day there'll be a drama written about this. It'll all be exposed.
I reckon so.
You know, I don't want to bring it up again, and obviously it's the big elephant in the room, but I think it's very resonant for everybody watching, of very much resonant of Bloodgate, what's happened on this show today.
How, what I will say is I will offer bonus points for your quiz. Yeah. I mean, you've got to get the question right first to then obtain a bonus point. But let's see how you get on. Question number one. Which of these teams have beaten Saracens the most times? Is it A, Bath, B, Gloucester, or C, Leicester?
I would say... it's got to be Leicester. It's got to be Leicester, surely, isn't it?
Correct. I will give you a bonus point if you can tell me how many times Leicester have beaten Saracens since 1989. And I'll make it even easier for you. It's in the 30s.
Oh, is it? You know, it's ridiculous. 32.
That's so close. 31. Oh. Hey, one from one is good. One from one is good. Okay.
That's a long
you
course.
Need to now score 6 points from the next 4 questions. Okay, question number 2. Who was voted Saracens Player of the Year in the 2018-2019 season? Was it A, Will Skelton? Was it B, Vincent Cock, or was it C, Tim Swinson?
Well, it wasn't Tim Swinson because he wasn't there.
So you've dismissed Tim Swinson. You think it's between Vincent Cock and Will Skelton.
I would go Will Skelton.
Okay, and for a bonus point, I want you to tell me what shoe size Will Skelton is.
I think he's a size... This is possible. I think he's a size 16. Way off.
It's 18.
Oh, how is that possible?
I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it? He's okay. Size 18. Okay, but you're 2 from 2. You're okay. 2 from 2.
So I need to still get 5 from 3, though, or something, don't I?
Correct. Yes. You will need bonus points. Who was, question number 3, who was the last non-English player to score the most tries in a season for Saris? Is it A, Chris Wiles? Is it B, Andy Christie? Or is it C, Nick Tompkins? Good question.
It's got to be Chris Wiles, then.
Incorrect. Oh. It was, in fact, the Welshman, Nick Tompkins. But hey, there's 2 bonus points up for grabs. Okay, in what year was Nick Tompkins the top try scorer as a non-Englishman for Saracens?
It's either... Oh, God, it might not be. It could be... No, I think it's last season. It's 2021-22.
Incorrect. It's the 2018-2019 season. Final opportunity getting a bonus point. And how many tries did Nick Tompkins, the Welshman, score in the 2018-2019 season?
I'm deflated. I'm downhearted now. I haven't got a clue. I'd say 13.
Okay, it's 11. That was a massive waste of time.
See, the questions are slightly unfairly scripted, I think, because I thought that it was going to be the top scorer for the team in that season was a non-Englishman. So I sort of, that's why.
I thought the question was fair and honest and very clear, actually, yeah. To be honest.
There's
with
a
you.
Bonus point for you, Tom. There you go. You're more than welcome. Okay, question number 4. Harlequins won 19-13 in Bath on Friday night, but who scored their first try? Was it A, Nick David? Was it B, Oscar Beard? Or was it C, Alex Dombrandt?
Oh, it was Dombrandt, wasn't it? Alex Dombrandt.
Correct. Question number 5. Which Australian state was former England head coach Eddie Jones born in? Was it A, New South Wales? Was it B, Tasmania? Was it C, Victoria?
Oh, it's screaming out New South Wales.
Unfortunately, it's incorrect. Oh. It was B. He was born in Burnie, Tasmania. Unsurprisingly, and we tried to keep the jeopardy in the game for as long as possible.
Man.
For this week, you call yourself a fan. Tom Deacon is not only just beaten you, he's also set a call yourself a fan world record by getting 8 points out of 5, which is remarkable. But
thank you.
For now, it only leaves us with just enough time to have a look at this weekend's European games and some massive matches coming up in this weekend's Champions Cup. Saturday, got Racing against Leinster, Sharks against Quins, Gloucester against Bordeaux, and Castra against Exeter. They're all taking place on Saturday, and of course, live and exclusive on BT Sport. Sunday, we've got Saracens against Edinburgh, Celtic against Ulster, Munster against Toulouse, and Ospreys take on the Gallagher reigning champions, Leicester Tigers. Gentlemen, I just want you to tell me, who do you think is going to win the Heineken Champions Cup this season?
My problem is I'm not watching enough French rugby, so I'm going to go Leinster. It's going to be boring and it's easy. I just think they just play great rugby and they're going to be irresistible. So I would go Leinster, but it's probably going to be a French team.
Okay, so you've not gone for Saracens, you've gone for Leinster. Tom, who are you going for?
Well, I'd build a bridge between what is a very angry fan. We've seen that in Hal Cruttendon. And I'm going to pass over an olive branch and I'm going to say, I think Saracens have got a good chance of doing it this year. And I feel like that's built us back together as brothers. Would you not say, Hal?
That's lovely. That is lovely. And I can say, you know, you did so well in the quiz. I know you've got massive rugby knowledge. So I do bow down to your superior ability. I just don't think an English side's going to win the Heineken Champions Cup. I just think at the moment it's going to be a French or Irish team, because very much like this quiz, they've got it all stitched up. It's all been unfair because they've got too much money in the French game and in the Irish game. They don't have the salary caps we have to deal with. So we will do very... I mean, I think Sarri's will go the furthest of any English side. I agree with you on that. I just think it's one step too many. I support my team. So I'm just showing that I will love them win or lose, you see. So I'm just not expecting... Not like you. We're not all about victory, and it's all about cheating your way to, you know.
And no, it's a little bit like the show. How we love you, whether you win or lose. But unfortunately for today, you're a massive loser. But there we go. But don't forget, there's also the Challenge Cup going on. It's going to be a huge weekend, and we'll be back this time next week to pour over the details. Just a quick reminder to follow us on social medias and look out for a podcast version of this show. My big thanks to Tom Deacon, Hal Crutterden, and Danny Ward. I'm Hugo Monnier, and I'll see you next week.